Hi, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Kirkland Alliance of Neighborhoods State of the City presentation. In a moment, I'll be introducing Mayor Wallen and City Manager Kurt Triplett. Just a quick introduction, tonight is being brought to you by the Kirkland Alliance of Neighborhoods. The City of Kirkland has 13 neighborhood associations, and I see some neighborhood leaders here in the room. I see some city council members here in the room. I want to say welcome to everyone. We get asked about why it's important to be involved in your neighborhood association. And the fact is that we've all got a lot of stuff going on in our lives, a lot of meetings to go to, a lot of things going on with our families and everything else. And there's binge watching of TV to catch up with, of course. But your neighborhood association is the best place to find out about what's going on right down the street from you in your neighborhood and to be part of your community. Sure, you can read the paper and you can read the blogs, but your neighborhood association is where your community is near and dear to you. And in the event of a, heaven forbid, emergency, it's the best place to be familiar with your neighbors. So I encourage you to be involved in your neighborhood association, and I encourage you to come to the Kirkland Alliance of Neighborhoods. We meet once a month. We meet on the second Wednesday of each month at the Kirkland Justice Center is our new home during the City Hall remodel. We meet at 7 o'clock, second Wednesday of every month, and we talk about some very important topics to neighborhoods, and we also have opportunities for public comment at each one of those meetings. So I thank you for coming out tonight, and without further ado, I'm going to turn it over in just a moment to our mayor, Mayor Amy Wallen. There will be an opportunity for Q&A after the mayor and city manager, Kurt Triplett, have delivered their remarks. And so without any further ado, Mayor Wallen.
So my family's here, as you can probably tell. They're very proud of me, and I'm very proud to be your mayor. So thank you very much for inviting me to speak. It's an absolute privilege, and thank you for the introduction. As I said, it's a great honor to be the mayor of a city like Kirkland, and to stand before you to deliver the State of the City address. Once again, on behalf of the City Council, I want to thank each of you for your involvement in and advocacy for this community. The Fiscal Times lists Kirkland as one of the most 25 livable cities in America for 2016. We know why. Our waterfront parks are the envy of the region. We've been recognized as one of the most walkable cities in the country. Our neighborhoods are safe, and our town is welcoming and inclusive. This is a lovely place to raise a family. Our quality of life has been our economic development strategy at the city, and it's working. Some of the most sought-after employers in this country want to locate in Kirkland. It's our job as your elected officials to continue providing that quality of life, and that quality of life makes us all want to call Kirkland home. Last year, I told you that the foundation of our community rests on three pillars: engaged neighborhoods, decisive, responsive government, and flourishing business. Your engagement in city government, your volunteer efforts in Green Kirkland, in the Time Bank, in Nourishing Networks, in Rotary and Kiwanis, in Map Your Neighborhood, in the CERT program, there are so many more that I haven't named, and in our many community events are essential to fulfilling Kirkland's mission of providing our residents the best place in the region to live, work, and play. So thank you. So past Monday was President's Day. It's a time when we as a nation reflect on the contribution of our past leaders who made the United States one of the greatest nations in history. It seemed fitting to me that we look to those leaders for inspiration on how Kirkland can remain one of the most livable cities in America. Thomas Jefferson said that the care of human life and happiness is the first and only object of good government. We agree. The safety and well-being of our residents and businesses are the top priorities of this council and our professional staff. And for Kirkland, good government is decisive, responsive government. government that listens carefully and then solves problems. Over the past few months, an emotional debate has taken place, first regarding the Aquatic and Recreation and Community Center, and now considering transit options on the Cross Kirkland Corridor. Central to this debate was the role of city government when residents feel strongly about an issue. When should the council be decisive on behalf of our residents and our future residents, and when should it be responsive? And I just don't see these terms as mutually exclusive. The council has been responsive in hearing the entire community as we've planned for Kirkland in 2035. And as Barack Obama said, we did not come here to fear the future, we came here to shape it. We on the council were elected to make tough decisions. To shape the future our residents have envisioned, we must continue to be decisive and implementing those plans. This decisive, responsive government has led to some remarkable achievements in 2015. We listened to the needs of our community, and we've responded. And because we've responded, I'm proud to tell you that the state of the city is thriving. In December, after nearly 2 years of work, shaped by thousands of comments from you all, our residents and our businesses, we adopted some of the most progressive and innovative land use plans in the state. You've been with us every step of the way, spending hours at workshops, open houses, community meetings, advocating for the needs of our neighborhoods and making our plans better. That is true community leadership. The council has adopted a capital improvement project list that makes those plans a reality. Our plans don't just sit on a shelf. We use them to get work done. Our capital improvement project invests over $200 million over the next 5 years in water, sewer, roads, sidewalks, crosswalks, flashing beacons, bike lanes, parks, and fire stations. These projects include completion of sidewalks on all community-identified school walk routes in the former city, while also setting millions aside to fund school walk route priorities in the new neighborhoods. We allocated over $10 million to start building new fire stations and renovating old ones so that everyone in the city is only 4 minutes away from state-of-the-art aid cars and fire engines should they have an emergency. Park Lane was finished and 85th Street was completed. I'm so very proud of both of these projects. These streets are now inviting for pedestrians as well as cars and will catalyze economic development. Waverly Beach Park is under renovation, and Edith Moulton Park will be rebuilt into a spectacular regional jewel. Residents concerned about weed-filled medians on Market and Central saw the city replace them with beautiful, low-maintenance landscaping. Businesses requesting downtown parking solutions witnessed the council adopting new policies and allocating over $1 million to create capacity, culminating in a new parking lot south of City Hall that will open this summer. And we did all of this. I also want to say we created the neighborhood safety program where neighbors can suggest projects. We make them happen. We have a flooding opportunity fund. We've solved real drainage problems. We are able to identify and respond to challenges. We did all this while keeping our price of government at 3.5%, which is well below the 5% that signifies best in class. Internally, our organization adopted the Healthy Kirkland Initiative in 2015 to improve the health of our employees and reduce the costs of healthcare. The majority of our employees joined us in this innovative and pioneering effort that combined a high-deductible healthcare plan with a near-site employee clinic operated by the private sector. Our Healthy Kirkland plan has succeeded beyond our wildest expectations. While most jurisdictions, and let's face it, businesses, have been seeing an average of 4% or more increase in their healthcare costs, Kirkland's 2016 rates actually dropped 4% below 2015, saving taxpayers hundreds of thousands of dollars, and allowing us to once again add more money to our reserve accounts, a cause that is close to my heart. Kirkland was also recognized by the state auditor with the 2015 Stewardship Award for the city's culture of accountability. Culture of accountability, acknowledging the responsiveness, openness, and professionalism of the city staff throughout the audits conducted through the year. Programs like the Healthy Kirkland Initiative, the Auditor's Award, Healthy Reserves, and other sound financial practices resulted in Kirkland retaining our AAA credit rating for 2016 and beyond. At the state level, this council, led by Councilmember Asher, partnered with our state legislators on the 2015 transportation package and delivered $75 million to build the new I-405 ramps into Totem Lake at Northeast 132nd, as well as over $1 million to connect the Cross Kirkland Corridor to Lake Washington Boulevard with complete sidewalks at Northeast 52nd Street. With laser focus during these past few years, we have secured success in getting grants for our projects unprecedented in the history of this city. Right now, Kirkland has over 700,000 square feet of commercial space, 600,000 square feet of retail space, and over 2,600 units of housing in our development services pipeline. Commercial vacancy rates, this won't surprise you, are at historic lows at less than 5%. Next week, well, that's actually last week, the LEED Platinum Google Phase 2 will open, and SRM, the developer who built it, says that Kirkland is the best government they've ever worked with. And as you probably know, they've chosen Kirkland to test their driverless cars, so we'll be watching for driverless cars. They right now have a driver in them, just in case, but they wanted to test driverless cars in hills and rain, which we can provide. Next month, Kirkland Urban will break ground, and Center Cal's villages at Totem Lake will soon follow. I think we should just take a moment to say Totem Lake Mall is going to redevelop, and this is an amazing accomplishment that we have all yearned for, and I truly hope that we can buy everything that we need to buy in Kirkland instead of driving to Bellevue or Woodinville or any of our neighbors, as much as we love them. These three projects will bring thousands of new jobs and hundreds of new housing units to Kirkland. The city's capital improvement plans have attracted and complemented these private investments. The accomplishments of 2015 and 16, early 16, truly demonstrate a thriving city, and I'm proud of this council, proud of our professional city staff, and proud of our community, you, for these achievements. But Thomas Jefferson also said, "I like the dreams of the future better than the history of the past." I'd like to share with you two of my biggest dreams for Kirkland in 2016. The first is that we accomplish more to help provide shelter for those who are less fortunate than we. This line is hard. Jimmy Carter tells us that the measure of a society is found in how they treat their weakest and most helpless citizens. Kurt gave me that line, and it is so hard. You shouldn't have given this one to me. It is tough. I'm going to do it again just to show that I can. Jimmy Carter tells us that the measure of a society is found in how they treat their weakest and most helpless citizens. Despite increasing our contributions to human services agencies and a regional coalition for housing, Kirkland has still not made a dent in the problem of homelessness, and the challenge of housing affordability continues to grow. Kirkland is a just and compassionate city. The need is huge, and the challenge is hard. It would be easy to give up or to leave the problem to future generations. But as Abraham Lincoln said, you cannot escape the responsibility of tomorrow by evading it today. Someone must act, and that someone should be us. The City Council has set a goal of siting an emergency women's shelter in Kirkland in 2016. Lives depend on our success, and we will succeed. But we must do even more than that. We need to come together as a community to address the growing crisis of housing affordability. The people that raise their families here should not be priced out of their homes. Our kids should be able to move out on their own. I have my daughter here. I would like her to someday be able to move out on her own. That's one of my goals. Our employees should be able to live close by where they work. I'll be asking my colleagues to join me in creating a Kirkland Home Affordability Task Force in 2016. If they agree, I'll be inviting the Chamber, the Kirkland Alliance of Neighborhoods, churches, service providers like Attain Housing and HopeLink, realtors, developers, and many more to join with the city. We have the talents and resources in this community to tackle this problem and lead the way for others. We will not evade the problem of housing, but we will solve it together. My second dream is that we work together to keep civility at the forefront of our discourse in Kirkland. There have been times during the ARC and Sound Transit discussions that civility has been lost. Some disagreed with the council on these topics, and most expressed that disagreement in ways that were thoughtful and insightful, with the commitment to making Kirkland better. But in the world of blogs, Twitter, Facebook, Next Door, and Be Neighborly, questioning the integrity and character of those with whom we disagree is far too common, and Councilmember Nixon always talks about this. As a community, we must reverse this trend. The word civil is from the Latin root civis, which means citizen. It is also the root word for civilization. For the Romans, civil discourse was the hallmark of good citizenship. It set them apart from the barbarian tribes and was the foundation of a civilized society. What makes us able to solve problems as a local government is our ability to work together, even when we disagree. There's 7 council members, we have 7 points of view, but we're able to work together even when we disagree. What makes Olympia and Washington, D.C. gridlocked is partisanship and vitriol. That is the path to divisiveness and inaction, and we cannot allow it to overcome our conversations. Fortunately, that is not who we are. Kirkland is a community that prides itself on mutual respect, common goals, and finding solutions together. Once again, lessons can be learned in the words of our presidents. Dwight D. Eisenhower said, "Never question another person's motives. His wisdom, yes, but not his motives." Woodrow Wilson said that the energy of disagreement should add light and not heat to the arguments. The lesson from both of these past leaders is that we can disagree without bitterness and rancor if we have respect for the motives and perspectives of each other. This year, I'll be calling on community leaders from all walks of life and every corner of our city to help develop a civility action plan and perhaps even an aspirational code of conduct that we can all share. Again, we have the opportunity and the resources to lead the way. Every one of us cares deeply for Kirkland. We are all strongly committed to keeping Kirkland the livable, walkable, green, and vibrant city that we all love. We may have differing views on how to achieve these goals, but if we remember what we share in common, we can discuss our differences in a manner that appeals to the best of us. And from those discussions may come compromise and new solutions that we can't yet see today. I've experienced this working with my colleagues who are in the room. Most of you know that I ended the first 2 State of the City addresses with references to the mottos of Ford Motor Company because my husband and I own Ford of Kirkland. In that spirit today, I'll conclude with some words of wisdom from our 38th president, the man who said on his inauguration, "I am a Ford, not a Lincoln." President Gerald R. Ford was the recipient of both the Congressional Gold Medal and the John F. Kennedy Profiles in Courage Award. When addressing Congress, he said, "I have always believed that most people are mostly good most of the time. I have never mistaken moderation for weakness, nor civility for surrender. As far as I'm concerned, there are no enemies in politics, just temporary opponents who might vote with you on the next roll call. During his Kennedy Award acceptance speech, President Ford said, "There is no way we can go forward except together, and no way anybody can win except by serving the people's needs. We cannot stand still or slip backwards. We must go forward now together. I pledge to always follow Gerald Ford's example, to keep civility at the forefront in Kirkland, to have no enemies, and keep serving the people's needs, and to keep going forward together. I ask that you all join me. Together we'll accomplish even more remarkable things and keep Kirkland the most livable city in America." And before I thank you, I'd like to recognize Councilmember Asher, Councilmember Nixon, our city manager, Kurt Triplett, who makes all these policies a reality, and of course, Kari and Mike and anybody else that works for the city of Kirkland. Thank you so much, and thank you for listening.
So what we did is we took the dots back here and we allocated time based on the subject areas, and we have about an hour's worth of questions. We may not need it all, but we'll start with the biggest one. It's the Cross Kirkland Corridor, and maybe do 10 minutes on that.
Okay.
All right.
We're doing like our neighborhood meeting style.
Yes.
Okay, great. Comments. We have 10 minutes to talk about the Cross Kirkland Corridor. Thank you so much. Who had a comment or a question? We'd love to hear from you. Yes, ma'am.
So I understand that the we had access to the corridor for a walking trail because there was a pre-existing right for somebody else to make plans for mass transit in the future. What I want to know is specifically how are the considerations going to benefit the citizens of Kirkland and not just people who want to transit through Kirkland?
So, short version, when we purchased the corridor back in 2011, we did buy it knowing that there was a Sound Transit easement going to be on the corridor when we took over ownership. So that ownership was in place. The easement was in place before Kirkland took it over. When we adopted our subsequent plans around the corridor, transit on the corridor was something that we always included. So the ongoing conversation we're having with Sound Transit has several different variations, and we're not sure how it's going to turn out. But central to what the City Council is trying to accomplish is to make sure that we develop the corridor in a way that does serve Kirkland. So the conversations we've been having about buses in particular versus light rail or some other mode is so that more people in Kirkland are served and more locations from Kirkland to the places we go, like Seattle and Redmond and Bellevue, can happen with transit on the corridor. So Sound Transit is a regional entity. There will be regional trips on the corridor, but what we're trying to do is maximize the number of local trips that will also be used on that corridor to connect Kirkland to the region and not simply have folks pass through. The last piece I'd say is that in any Sound Transit proposal that they're looking at, the terminus of the corridor is Totem Lake. So they're not intending it to go any further. So the main focus of it is really from Totem Lake south to Bellevue. And then what we hope is that we'll also have the flexibility to go west to Seattle and east to Redmond with some sort of bus system. But we're still working with Sound Transit on all those issues, and we're going to know a lot more in March when they actually come out with their system plan. And then our community will have a chance to react to that plan. Maybe support it, maybe oppose it, depends on what they actually choose. But keeping Kirkland at the forefront is really central to what the council is trying to accomplish.
So I'd also like to just invite Dave or Toby, if you want to, you know, jump in at any point, please just say the word. You know, we knew it had a Sound Transit easement, so we developed a Cross Kirkland master plan right after the acquisition that called for three separate paths, pedestrians, bikes, and a 30-foot transit window. I think what's happened is the legislature gave Sound Transit the authority to go to the ballot last July. So typically in Kirkland, we spend several years making plans. and talk in, and what's Kirkland going to be like in 2035? What will we need? Unfortunately, we're kind of, I don't want to say jammed by Sound Transit, but yeah, I guess I do. We were kind of jammed. We didn't have a lot of time to react. And so I think people are feeling like, hey, wait a minute. And I think another, you know, thing we could have done better is always, we kind of knew interim trail, but I think we didn't get that message out there enough. This is an interim trail. We always knew that transit would come someday. And I think it's 20 years out, so we need to think, you know, 20 years out. I think it's 20 years out. There are probably different opinions about that. But it's a big deal, and I wish we had longer time, but we've been just working with Sound Transit as quickly as we can. They want to go to the ballot in on a presidential year, and they want it to pass, and they're pushing, and we're just doing our best.
The back.
Yes, sir.
Hi. Oh, I'm sorry. So I get very confused about the trail and the transit. It was my understanding is that there'd be both. And when as I read all the citizen inputs and all the stuff in the news is stay away from my trail, stay away from my trail, stay away from my trail. Am I wrong in thinking that the ultimate plan is to have the trail and to have transit next to it? Isn't that what the plan is?
Yes, that is the master plan. The master plan sets aside a 30-foot transit window envelope, we call it, transit envelope, which could handle Sound Transit light rail line or bus rapid transit line, and then reserves the remaining 70 feet of the corridor for what we hope is a series of trails and other amenities and places where we can engage. Sound Transit has already committed in several of the meetings that we've been at that they will be replacing the trail if they bring transit down the corridor. So they're going to build transit and a trail next to it. I think they're not just doing that to get votes. They also more or less have to, because the easement that holds the freight easement, the Rails to Trails Act, the Federal Rails to Trails Act, actually requires that there be a trail if there's not freight in order to retain the whole corridor. So they want to do it. They know it's the right thing to do to replace the trail, but they also have to do it. So we've tried to assure everybody that while it will look different when transit comes, there will always be a regional trail on the corridor.
I want to add to that. We developed the Cross Kirkland Master Plan, and if you haven't seen it, you should. It's very beautiful. It has sort of eddies and park spaces and amphitheaters and picnic spots, and it's got these three separated pedestrian, bike, and then the transit. Not one great big concrete thing, which I've seen. That's not true. And you know, right now Sound Transit is collecting $17 million a year from Kirkland, and you know, respectfully, I don't think we're getting a lot of service for that. So if they're going to collect maybe nearly double that for the next 20 years, at the end of that 20 years, I'd like to have something for Kirkland. And Kirkland's going to be different then. And they're kind of pushing us towards light rail right now with two stops. And I'm thinking driverless shuttles that are electric and quiet. And so I don't know. We're a ways apart, but we're working towards it hard.
Next one is traffic and pedestrian and auto safety under Public Works.
Comments or questions? Yes, sir.
Thank you. Thanks for your time tonight. I live in South Rose Hill, and there is not a complete network of sidewalks kind of throughout the area. As there's developers, they put in stubs of sidewalks, and Amy, you've talked a lot about walkability today. With kind of the winters we have here, there's a lot of times where you're walking on narrow shoulders or next to ditches in the dark. What's the plan to kind of fill out that network? Because I think that's important.
Especially in your neighborhood. I agree, I walk in your neighborhood. Kurt, go ahead and take that one.
Yes. So I can talk about this a little bit, but if you want to go into more detail, I'll probably need to phone a friend or get back to you with more information. So I was telling John Kappa, I know a lot about a lot, but I don't know everything about everything in the city. What I can say is that at least in the next 5 years, unfortunately, that has not been the priority for sidewalks in the city and the capital program, but we want to get to it. So it's in the 20-year plan, which could mean it starts as soon as year six. But the city council adopts a six-year plan, which was 2015 through 2020. And the decision they made when we went through the whole community process was to focus on school walk route completion and making sure that there's a sidewalk on every school walk route, at least one side of the street to every elementary school. So we have put in almost $10 million to complete those first, and those should all be finished by 2019. We might go a little bit into 2020, although Councilmember Asher is adamant we're gonna finish in 2019, so we're gonna do that. And then the nice thing is we have a whole series of investments in the sidewalk financial plan that goes from 2020 through the end of the 20-year period, and those have not been prioritized yet. So that's one of the places we're gonna look is, where do we need to now come back and create connectivity there beyond the school walk route? So they're definitely in a 20-year plan, and they could be as soon as year six, but at least right now, those are not the top priorities. The school walk routes are the top priorities.
How does it work when, I know all this is based on expected funding, when the economy's going fairly well like it is now, does the extra tax dollars accelerate your six-year plan, or do new things get prioritized?
Well, I mean, the technical answer is better answered by Kurt. I mean, the first priority in my mind, and I think from a policy direction, is to replenish reserves. So we, during the recession, we spent down a lot of our reserves. So we have worked very assertively to get those filled back up for rainy day. And then, you know, we've had, you know, a lot of the rapid flashing beacons that you see added were added kind of through that acceleration of, we had more money, so we said, you know, how could we make a big bang for the buck a lot more safe? And you can see we need a lot more at this, you know, it's dark and rainy out there. But Kurt, you want to add to that?
So that's what the mayor was talking about is particularly true for our general fund revenues, primarily sales tax. When the sales tax comes in and we see a big boost, the council, being very fiscally prudent, sets it aside in our rainy day funds and reserves, which have almost been replenished. There is another revenue source that comes in when you have a recovering economy, which is the real estate excise tax. And so every time there's a transaction or a house is bought or sold, 0.25%, 0.5 total, is set aside and comes back to the city. So that real estate excise tax can be millions of dollars every year. And in fact, it has huge swings with the economy. So in 2009, for example, in the depth of the recession, that dropped as low as $2 million. In 2007, 2 years before, it was as high as $8 million annually coming in. So we're starting to see that real estate excise tax come way back up while we have this sort of booming housing economy. And that is actually what the city council programmed to do a lot of the sidewalk work, because the real estate excise tax is limited to mostly capital uses. So it's a perfect kind of thing to invest in one-time infrastructure. So the council basically set aside most of that we see coming in to school walk routes, sidewalks, rapid flashing beacons, and so on. And it can also be used for parks. So we use some of it also to, for example, finish off the Waverly Beach Park project as another example. So really trying to invest those one-time funds in infrastructure for quality of life, but set aside the ongoing revenues like sales tax for the operating budgets and reserves.
I'd like to pile on, if I could, on that one, because sidewalks is particularly close to my heart. Coming out of the recession, we've had to prioritize pretty close to the vest because of the downturn. As we're getting more robust revenue sources, we're having to make some really hard choices, because additional money, just as you said, doesn't necessarily give us additional staff capability to handle a larger volume of projects. Adding staff is a significant emotional event for our decision machinery that we've got in the city, because it's permanent costs that are added on. I think we're probably headed there. If you have particular interests in your neighborhood, one really good way of raising those priorities of your interests is through your neighborhood association, because they get involved every year in the neighborhood safety program. So that's a way of getting particular interests up. But the overall ability to handle larger volumes of projects, I think it's going to take us a while to really say, okay, we'll commit to long-term additional staff funding. Yeah, the mayor mentioned We're at about, 3.5% on our cost of government, where it's significantly higher in other places. There is a being low is good in that you're getting a lot, but not being too low may be not so good because you're not making the investments you need to make in the community. So we're struggling with that, and I think that's a good thing to have in the community.
Dave, do you want to tell them about Suggest a Project, or did I miss that?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
The lady that does this.
Okay, so if you want to work with your neighborhood to suggest a project, the first place to go is to our interactive Suggest a Project map online. So go to the Capital Improvement Program page where they have the projects, which links you to the map, which will show you all the funded and unfunded capital improvement projects. And then you can say, I want to suggest a project. And then you key in on that location and you send that in, and that gets put on our books. And when the neighborhood looks at what projects they want to move forward in the neighborhood safety program, they'll see that. Yep.
Okay. Other comments or questions on that? Yes, ma'am.
I was just curious. I've been in this city for longer than I'd like to admit, and there is such rampant growth, like say within the last, since 2010 or so. How is that affecting our electrical and water infrastructure? How are we building to keep up with all of that? Because every day some new structure, multi-units, all you have to do is look around. How do we stand with that, and what's that costing us?
Well, the first thing I want to say is the Growth Management Act in the state of Washington, in order to, you probably already know this, to protect rural lands, requires cities to take growth. And we are one of the cities that is required to take growth. We have to plan for a certain number of housing units, a certain number of jobs, and the infrastructure to support that. So we, a lot of the growth that you're seeing was not... The zoning was in place for that, has been in place for that for many years. And so we have, economic recovery and people take advantage of the opportunity to develop their property, subdivide, create the plats and the development that you're seeing. As far as infrastructure, you've probably seen something about Energize East Side. The Puget Sound Energy is saying they need to do a major upgrade of their infrastructure to serve the additional population, as well as our proclivity for lots of gadgets nowadays. We're always plugged in and plugged on, and they're using a lot of electricity. But I probably ask Kurt about, a lot of major upgrades of water mains, and some of the projects we did during 85th Street and Park Lane was, fixing and upgrading the infrastructure. But Kurt can probably talk more about that.
Yeah, I mean, the good news for the region right now is we have a lot of water. There's times when it, approaches some drought level for different years, but the water capacity of the region is strong. And Kirkland is part of a coalition of cities on the east side that's called the Cascade Water Alliance. And we get our water primarily through contract from the city of Seattle, which gets it primarily from the rivers, particularly the Cedar River watershed and some others. Cascade Water also owns Lake Taps, which is a reservoir and a river, White River. So we have probably 20 to 30 years of capacity for water at current rates of consumption. So the issue of water hasn't been a huge issue. However, there have been times, particularly as the snowpack doesn't get as high as we like it to be, where you do get drought in the summertime. So the whole region has a challenge with reservoir capacity in the summer times, which may get worse over time. But in terms of the actual water that falls that's available to us, we're fine. And part of that has become conservation in the last 15 years has been pretty extraordinary. The amount of water that's used by people has been dropping and dropping and dropping and dramatically beyond all projections of what they thought they would need. So rather than water consumption rising, they're actually seeing it drop because low-flow toilets and low-flow showerheads and people being much more aware. So generally, we're okay on the water side for quite a while, depending on how the climate goes. But that's a place where we're okay. The mayor mentioned electricity, and then, of course, one of our biggest issues is traffic and transportation. That's probably the most impacted infrastructure by growth. And so that is what we're struggling with, and one of the reasons where most of that $200 million in the capital plan is invested in transportation solutions, of which one is the corridor discussions we're having. So
I understood the question to be a little bit different. And the answers you gave were great, but they were at the regional level talking about electrical transmission lines and the regional level of total water capacity. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but I thought the question was more about within an individual neighborhood, if there's a new development, how do we make sure that the water utility can deliver the water to that new development? Or how does Puget Sound Energy make sure that there's enough electrical capacity in the transformers and things on that street to serve that new development? And I think the comforting answer is that that's part of the building permitting process. Mm-hmm. Those capacities are looked at, and if there's a need for additional capacity at that very local level, then the developer's required to pay for it. At least that's my understanding.
Yeah, that's correct. There's a hookup charge that's paid, and then also the new monthly bills that are paid by development that hooks up, that covers the cost of the infrastructure to those new
transportation concurrency that says where there's a formula if they can even build.
Thank you. The gentleman up here first, Carrie.
This one?
Yeah. Sorry.
So I sort of had a slightly different interpretation of the same. Okay. Question.
It was a great question.
So our children have very recently built a house on Fifth Street, and there's a fire hydrant across the street from them, and they were told there was not enough water availability in that hydrant to even try to put out a fire in their house, and they had to put a sprinkler system in. And when a little bit of questioning, it turns out the main going up that street was put in 30 or 40 or 50 years ago, whatever it is, and it's like a 6-inch main or an 8-inch main or something, and it really needs to be at least a foot or whatever is the standard today. And so how is the city going about remedying those problems?
Sure, please.
My name is Jeremy Collin. I'm one of the capital projects engineers. We have a couple of plans, comprehensive plans, one for the water system, one for the sewer, and those are in addition to our capital projects plans that we have. So the capital projects are concerned with the life cycle replacement. So if sewer main's 50 years old, that's when it should be replaced. The comprehensive plans take that into account, but they also look forward and use growth projections and go, what are we going to need in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years? To get directly to your question, one of those calculations is also a fire flow calculation. So we might look at this neighborhood here is gonna, let's say double in capacity. What does that mean for fire flow? We need to upsize the mains here, here, and here, and provide additional fire hydrants to support that growth capacity. So I think that's kind of maybe the answer to get to what we're looking for here.
Thank you.
And if I can say, the reason we offer the sprinkler as the alternative is to say, rather than say you can't build until we can get you a new pipe, which may be 15 or 20 years, we say, if you're gonna build because it's a low flow area, the sprinkler will make the house more fire safe if you have it in. So,
I understand that. So. You don't have a choice. Right. You either don't build the house,
right,
or you put the money.
So, right, and there's only a couple places in the city where we do that, but we do have that requirement in the low floor areas. Yes. So. Mm-hmm.
You were next.
So I think my question was answered. I'm not sure. So if they build another 800 houses in my neighborhood, does that mean my water pressure is going to go down? Or is that covered by these plans?
It depends. The comprehensive plan looks at something over a 30-year period, but the city doesn't determine who builds first or when. So we try to adapt. That's why we have a 6-year capital plan where we look at everything we think we're going to build in 30 years, and then we say, what's happening today? Oops, we need to adjust because we didn't expect, Kirkland Urban to pop, so we now have to turn and invest in there and move some projects forward that would otherwise have come later. So if that started to happen, you'd see the staff coming to the council and saying, we want to reprioritize the capital list so that we can upsize there so that you're not going to see a drop. We're not as nimble as You know, so it may take a year or two to catch up to that kind of change because it takes a while to put these projects into construction. But that's the way the process works, is as we see things changing in the city, we change the timing and emphasis of the plans to try to make sure that that doesn't happen.
A couple years ago, I went to Finn Hill neighborhood meeting, and they were talking about redoing the streets, like from on 100th Avenue, like from Simons Road down to Kirkland Town Center area. And they were going to complete the bike lane. The bike lane starts like from Simons Road and goes down to the trail, Sammamish River Trail, down by the golf course. And then it ends like around where the DQ is and all the way down to the Kirkland Town Center. And they say they were going to put in, complete the bike lane so that it's one continuous bike lane from the trail all the way down to Marina Park. But it still hasn't happened. And I was riding my bike in that area where there's no bike lane, and the cars get really close to me. And I know the cars are king when it comes to the road, but can we just think about shared access that we, you know, we all need to share the road, bikes and cars? And so I get forced up into the sidewalk because I'm scared to ride on the road because it's only really the safe place. So I still am holding out hope that the bike lane will get completed in that area.
So I don't know if Aaron or Cara, you have information on that, but
yeah. 100th Avenue.
And John Pascal may as well. We do have that in the six-year capital program to start, so that is still the intent. And I believe we're on design for that project, and then we're gonna have to seek some serious outside grant money to complete the project. But that is one of the goals, is to get that done and have a complete street there that includes the bike lane. So
it's still
very much alive, and I will find out more information. I can get back to you if, Aaron, you have some more to add on that.
The 100th Avenue project is close to being in design right now. I am also personally working on a project that's going to add bike lanes all the way up Juanita from the village down here at the park all the way to the city limits. There's a second project coming in that's going to improve the bike lanes from the south city limits to connect with where I'm starting there at Juanita Park. So there's a real, I guess what I'd say is there's a real push to fill in all the bike lanes that are in the transportation master plan and what's the other one? The walkable Kirkland or whatever. Yeah, that one. So there is a plan out there that says we want bike lanes all these places, and we are aggressively moving forward on those things. And a lot of that is due to our success at getting grants, as Mayor Whalen talked about earlier.
Part of that is, you know, you have to start with the plan, right? You do the plan, and I think John's going to address this too. You have to start with the plan, and then you can get the money. So it takes time. We spend a lot of time and energy getting a beautiful plan, and then we aggressively go out for grant money because, you know, these are many, many million dollars worth of work. John?
Yeah, just to kind of address some of those issues, you know, when we were annexed in 2011, the Finn Hill Neighborhood Alliance, we looked at a map and we wanted to make sure that Kirkland was planning for the infrastructure improvements for the northern neighborhoods. Many of the improvements that had been on the books in King County for quite some time but never really occurred because of many issues. And one of them was 100th Avenue, basically from 132nd to 145th, which is the northern city limits. And that was a project that I spearheaded to try to get funded. It got funded, and then the city got $3 million for design money. It's a $10 million project, though, to actually build. So these projects aren't cheap. They cost a lot of money. The city doesn't necessarily have all the construction money, so it's really important to find outside sources. It's important to be competitive with other cities, and that's a great project. And I'm hopeful that it will be built some point in the future. But I would say that I think in that particular instance, safety was the key and same with wanting to drive. It's really about safety. It's about bicycle safety. It's about pedestrian safety. It's about getting in and out of your neighborhood. And I think that's, Kirkland's really passionate about that, and I think that we're good at building those type of projects.
There's a bike lane. Cars respect that. They see that as a barrier. But when there isn't a bike lane, they get really close to you, and it can get really scary. And so it makes cyclists nervous when they don't have their own space.
Agreed.
So tell me which side you bike on, and we'll start on that side for you.
Any other pedestrian and bicycle safety or traffic comments? Seeing none, we'll go to street preservation and the capital improvement program. Kind of blends right into what we were talking about. Street preservation.
What does that mean? Go ahead.
Yeah, it really means overlays and slurry seals. Basically, how do we keep the asphalt in the roads, both the major arterials and the neighborhood streets, you know, at a high level of quality, so no potholes.
If you don't keep maintaining them, they just degrade until they're no longer able to be repaired. So we have to constantly have a plan for improving and maintaining the streets and keeping that pavement condition index, which my colleague, Mr. Asher, loves so much and knows a lot about and is very passionate about, keeping us to a level where we're not spending more money at the end because we've let it go too far.
You should thank everybody for voting for the
road levy. Yes, absolutely.
2012, yes. It's more than doubled our ability to get work done.
Mr. McNally.
And we have two accountability reports back here, one for parks and one for streets, if you want to see the results of that the last few years.
That wasn't my question, but it's more or less of a comment. I really love the preservation program that we have going in general. But to tie in with the development of the infill housing that goes on in our community and the sewer connections and water connections that may come in right after a street has been... Yeah. fixed, and all of a sudden we may see, let's say in South Rose Hill or Bridal Trails, a street that has just been rebuilt, and now we have four crossings of sewers going on, and we have bumps, kerthump, kerthump. What is the thought of how we're going to deal with that in the future to make sure that those crossings get fixed and fixed relatively permanently?
I agree with you. This has happened on my street a lot. And Kurt, what's the answer?
There is one, actually. Coming to a committee that you haven't had yet on the Finance Committee, but we talked to the Public Works and Parks Committee about this. So, well, first I should say we really do work very hard with utilities and developers and others to say, you know, 1 year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, this is what we intend to pave. So if particularly with other utilities like North Shore Utility District or Puget Sound Energy or gas companies, anyone who's gonna put something in the street, we try to do it all at the same time. So you saw that on 85th Street when we went all the way down and we put in lots of infrastructure so that we wouldn't have that issue happening in the big streets. It's a lot harder in the neighborhoods and in some of the arterials because growth is just constant, right? So you put it in and then people come through and they tear it up. So. The city council's done a couple things. First, they gave us some permanent inspectors. We used to have inspections that were done by contract, and what we discovered was there was relatively shoddy inspections. So someone would patch, a contract inspector would say, hey, that looks great. Developer's out of town, the inspector's out of town, and we're left with kind of a sagging patch, right? So the city council addressed that by saying we need to have on-staff permanent folks who demand a higher standard from the patching. So what you will see is most of the new patching is much better and more level and a higher quality. The other thing that we're going to be asking the council for is our very own milling machine. So we've given a presentation to the Public Works and Parks Committee, but we are about to give it to the Finance Committee, which is, I think, a couple days from now.
The one I want.
And one of the many reasons we want that is to deal with some of those neighborhood arterial and local street areas where this happens, because we don't currently own one, and so we usually only, a milling machine basically grinds the pavement. It lays that really nice track that you can actually drive on, then you come and you lay the asphalt on top of it. So the city doesn't have one, so they only usually come into the city when we're doing a major pavement like Lake Washington Boulevard, for example. But if we have our own very own milling machine, you can actually go out to a section like that. A city crew can do it, particularly off season, and we can come in and we can level it out, then we can come back in and we could put a much bigger patch that levels the whole thing out. So the case we're making to the City Council is the whole pavement condition index will rise as we fix some of these more local problems, and we can get a lot more pavement done every year if we have this, and in the end it's actually going to save us money and provide better quality for the public. So stay tuned. But we definitely understand it's an issue. It's a growth-related issue, and we really are working on it.
This is a real simple question. I love that there is now a sidewalk on 108th all the way down to, you know, down to the curve there. But is there an immediate plan to fix the roadway? Because it's horrendous, and yes. You know, we want those Google people to like leaving work every day.
So that is actually a great example of what I just talked about, which is, and we have had complaints about 6, and we all know it's here, but I believe it's next summer that whole thing will get paid. But that's what we did, as we said, we know Google is going to be, you know, in 2 years of construction, which they were, so we're going to have all these heavy trucks going down the road. We did a water main replacement, we did a sewer line replacement, and we knew we were doing all these sidewalks along the sides. So that's one of the cases where we looked at and said, over the next 5 years, there's going to be a ton of wear and tear on this road. So let's not pave it till it's all done, and then we'll come through and make it really nice. That has made it challenging right now, but when it's finished, then we won't be seeing it dug up or torn up. So I believe that is next summer where we intend to have all that paved. But I'll double check on that, but I believe it's scheduled for next summer. But we waited, and now that the Google building is open, we'll come back through and pave six.
We could move on to economic development if there are no more questions on street preservation.
Questions or comments on economic development?
I, as you may or may not remember, but I live in Norkirk, and we have used the Park Place Plaza as a place to do all kinds of shopping. And one of the things that was wonderful about that as a place in our city was there were a lot of local owner, you know, mm-hmm. home, you know, people who live nearby at any rate own the storefronts. And one of the things we're worried about is that they're rebuilding this thing and they're going to make it into a mini Bellevue Square with national stuff in it that has nothing to do with our city. You know, our city is one of the things that makes it special is there were local vendors there, people that own their own businesses. And that's a really important thing to many of us, I think. And I just like to be sure that that's going to be preserved. And that's not sort of what I'm getting when I read between the lines. It talks about how, you know, this national chain is going to come in or, you know, I don't care about that. If I want that, I'll go down to Bellevue. I'm sorry. I want something that's local that I feel that I'm talking to a neighbor when I go in and do business.
Well, I really hope that what we have with our two new developments is a mixture of both. What we have currently is that people in Kirkland have to go to Bellevue or Linwood or Woodinville to do some of their shopping. It's an interesting conversation about the role of government, right? I mean, that's a private development, and we cannot go in and say, okay, we want 75% locally owned businesses, we don't get to do that. It's privately owned. We can, through our development agreement, make some conditions. I think we said we'd like a theater. We did some, but overprescription by government is probably not where this council is. I at least it's not where I am. I'll say that. But I hope that we will, I know that we will be assertively recruiting local business. I'm a local business owner too. I want to shop for my neighbors. I want exactly the same thing that you do. And I believe that our economic development staff has been working closely with the businesses that have had to relocate. And it's been a tough time that both of our major commercial centers are going through this at the same time, but to maintain relationships with them and encourage them to come home. That's our hope. Do you guys, gentlemen, want to add anything to that?
But I just add one more part. If you hear a Kirkland Urban presentation, they will tell you, and you know, it's, you sort of have to decide if you take their word for it or not, that that is their goal as well, is to have a primarily local option. One of the reasons for that, and I think most people have heard this, but there's an exclusion zone. If you sign up at Bellevue Square, there's an exclusion zone that is created by Kemper that prevents stores that are in Bellevue Square from being close to it, and Kirkland Urban is within that exclusion zone. So you're not going to see a lot of the stores in Bellevue Square and Kirkland Urban because they can't be, right? But even before that, when they've come out and made presentations, I've seen them make them at neighborhood meetings, they do talk about the fact that they really do want to create a different feel. They're not trying to create a mall at Kirkland Urban. They're trying to create a place, a sense of place of Kirkland. So the example they've used is more of a university village type development, which does have some national chains in it. But I think you're going to see more of that. And so, again, I know that's their hope, is to have more local and regional folks in their retail. But, you know, as the mayor said, we don't prescribe that, so we'll just have to see how that turns out.
Civility. So following up on that, I do believe that when the builders want to build a new development, there's a requirement that they have so much affordable housing put in. I do believe that we could use some sort of government influence with the people that are putting these malls in, that they would be able to have local people be there without $6,000 a day rent. And I think that's part of the point that we're trying to get across here.
It's almost like an affordable business concept instead of affordable housing concept.
We need you. You're welcome to come to our city, but don't say we have to leave because we can't afford it.
Yeah. Interesting idea.
So you mentioned in your speech about a new parking lot south of City Hall. Would you please discuss that a little bit and talk about how that is going to benefit the downtown economic development? Is it a place for employee parking? Is it patron parking? How will it be marketed? That sort of thing.
Well, I think the concept is to start it with downtown employee permit parking. The idea being that that will pull downtown employees off the street and put them on into the city, the lot south of City Hall. And we're going to go back to the assertive license plate recognition software enforcement. I can't remember how many spaces.
Yeah, so it's 84 spaces under the current design, 84. And so the council also made a final decision about how the lot will be allocated, but that's the general idea that we've been presenting is that we'd start with employee permit parking, downtown employee permit parking, not City Hall employees. And see how it goes. See whether we want to change that or tweak that, or you know, maybe there's a difference after five and so forth. So the goal is first and foremost to get employees out of downtown so that patrons can get to downtown, and then second to see is there any other way it can help the economic vitality. So that's really the main reason the council did it, is to help benefit the business down there.
And I think we might be taking on Lake and Central again. I think it's possible. The Lake and Central city-owned parking lot. Yeah.
And partnership with CAM.
Right. Yes, ma'am. Or I think Cory. Yeah. Back here.
So in regards to the parking lot, I understand there's going to be the in or the out. One or the other is going to be on 3rd Avenue, and then the other one will be on 1st. So are they going to level it? Because there have been two or three homes torn down there, and there's a rockery, and there's trees and stuff. Is that all going to be demolished? Will it all be just a flat asphalt parking lot?
So the version we're putting in now isn't the entire property. So where you saw the two buildings that were demolished, there's a fairly steep drop-off. So we're actually using that for staging for the City Hall remodel project, so nothing's going to be developed there for the short term.
So will it be just where the pea patch is primarily?
Right, basically the pea patch to the annex,
Will they do anything like on the sidewalk or?
Yeah, so they will. I don't know if Aaron, if this is your project, probably not. But so what we will do is, so the council actually gave us a little extra money to make it an all pervious pavement parking lot. So it's actually going to be very environmental. So the water will actually flow through it. So very environmental parking lot, and we are going to have sidewalk at the edge of it. So, you know, it'll be built fully. Compliant with all our codes and lit and all that, so we want to make sure that it's a great neighbor. So we're working on making sure that the lighting would be, you know, appropriate and focused down and not, you know, be creating glare and things. So, but we're still on the design stages and also community conversation stages. But that's the intent right now. Is it's only about 2/3 of the property. It's not. It doesn't go all the way to the other side of the street, and we don't have any immediate plans to do that other section.
And so the rockeries and stuff, will it be level? Will they be ripped down, do you think, or?
I have to check on that.
Maybe
I don't.
Maybe we could get back.
I'll get back to
the details.
On that. I don't know exactly
you
how
get
it comes
in. Get your contact
to
info and get you someone.
But thank you. That's a great question.
You know, I went to an open house at the Walk the other day because I live right behind them. I want to know what their affordable housing is because they're putting 20 homes there, and they're 900 to 1.5 million. What's affordable? For Kirkland.
Which place
there.
Are you talking about?
The Walk, right? There's the Walk, there's my place, there's Google. There, it's right off 7th. And there's 20 homes there that they crammed in. And they are, the one I was in was 1.2 million. And they start at 9. What's affordable there? What have we done there that to help Kirkland?
So that particular development is a single family development, although it's small lots, and we do not have that affordable housing requirement on single family development subdivisions. So in that particular case, no affordable housing is required.
So multifamily is where we have the affordable housing requirements.
That might be something the council would like to look at and change, if it's possible, because there's no affordable housing around here. I mean, any of the people that I've talked to that are looking for it, there's at least a 3-year wait.
Yeah,
although they imagine housing's going out on, what, Northeast 124th? What's that, 91 units or something?
Right.
But that's lottery, isn't it?
Through the service providers, yeah. They have their own process.
I might be able to shed a little light on that particular project. It technically is a multifamily zone and technically a multifamily project, but it is designed as individual home sites on a multifamily site, so it is subject to the affordable housing criteria. And as such, that particular developer has elected to pay into a fee for the overall arch housing for King County to build up the housing affordability pool that the King County Affordable Housing Act has to use on a bigger project. The thought for that is that the King County Housing Alliance can take small amounts of money from projects and use it towards a large affordable housing project and make a bigger impact than on onesie twosie houses on a project like that. And that's an option that's made available to developers to build it into a project or to pay into a fund. And that particular project, they paid into a fund, and I believe it was almost $1 million into the fund on that particular project.
I am so glad our Houghton Community Council member, John Kapler, is here. He's the vice chair of the Houghton Community Council. Thank you, John.
So the next topic is fire.
Is he still on the planning commission? And our planning commissioner, John Pascal, has a question.
Yeah,
John?
Thank you. So, one of the most basic services of a local government is its fire, police, emergency services, and Kirkland is really blessed to have a great fire department and police department. And as several folks, many are aware that we've been working on the North End Fire Service, improving response times. One of the things, I happen to live in Finn Hill and was involved in that effort. And one of the things that we identified was the need to provide additional staffing for Finn Hill because we are somewhat geographically isolated from several of the other fire stations throughout the city. And what we did was, for Fire Station 25 along Holmes Point Drive, we increased it from 3 firefighters to four. So there's four firefighters there at 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And council approved that, and that's what we think is a really good thing. And it kind of came to light last week, unfortunately, where tragically someone lost their life in a house fire on Finn Hill. And talking with some of the firefighters, they responded, you know, as soon as they got the call, and they got there really quickly, and they were, because they had the four firefighters, they were able to jump on it, get in, and try to save that life. And the difference is other fire stations with only three firefighters, they have to wait for that second fire engine to get there. It took essentially 8 minutes longer for that second fire engine to get there that day. Unfortunately, you know, didn't save that life, but that 8 minutes, I am very confident in the future that there are going to be situations where that will save a life. That 8 minute difference will save a life. And so I just want to say thank you to City Council and others for, you know, seeing that happen. And I just want to, the question is what else are you looking at to make changes with fire service?
Toby, do you want to take it?
I'd be happy to address it some.
Or Dave?
Yeah, so in terms of what we're working on right now to improve fire service in the city, the key project is to build another fire station. If you look at the map over here, right now in the north part of the city, we have Fire Station 25, which is about in this location here, and we have Fire Station 27, which is over in this vicinity right here. And unfortunately, that leaves kind of gaps up in this area and up in the northeast part of Kingsgate, where we can't get there in the national standard response time, which is 4.5 to 5 minutes. And so our plan is to build another station in this vicinity, around the intersection, or around Juanita Elementary School. And it's public information now, we can talk about it. We're actually buying three houses right on that corner, and eventually they will be torn down and their new fire station built there. And you might say, well, that's really close to Fire Station 27. Our intention is to sell that existing Fire Station 27 and build a new 27 over here by the hospital. And that would close the response time gap in Northeast Kingsgate and also give us a second fire station on the east side of 405. Right now, we only have one fire station east of 405, and when the big one hits, we expect a lot of those overpasses to collapse. And if we only have one fire station in North Rose Hill covering the whole east side of the city, that won't work out too well. So putting the 27 over here both closes this coverage gap and helps us in a disaster situation. Having the station at 100th and 132nd gives us the coverage in northeast Finn Hill that it's hard for Station 25 to get to now. The area that would still be somewhat of a gap, and I'm sorry if some of you live here, this northern part of Holmes Point Drive would still have a longer response time than we would prefer. But we've looked at the types of calls in that area, we've looked at the number of calls in that area, and it's very small. And this is an area where, in many cases, sprinklers are already required. So from fire response, that covers a lot of the issues there. And then the other issue would be medical services. And we're working on some creative ideas to help people understand the importance of having automatic defibrillators in their homes when they have those kind of response time challenges. The other thing I'd want to say is we are looking at our other fire stations at 25 and 26 and 21 and 22, and we're going to be doing upgrades on them as well. If you look at those fire stations today, just as an example, I hope I'm not taking up too much time.
You're doing great.
A lot of them have roll-up doors, and what's been discovered is in an earthquake situation, they can't roll the doors up and your fire trucks are stuck in the stations. So the newer technology is a completely different design that can still be opened even when the power's off and when the if there's been some kind of shaking that's gone on. The doors don't get off the track so easy. We're planning on putting those in. We're also gonna put some more environmental protections in for the firefighters. Like when they've been in a fire, they take off their bunker gear and hang it up. Right now, those fumes kind of pervade the station. We're going to put some additional ventilation in so that they don't have those environmental concerns. And there are some other upgrades that we're going to do to the stations as well. This is all in the capital plan that's been talked about to be done over the next few years. And one of the things we're talking about in our council retreat, an all-day meeting, we're retreating to Bellevue anyway. It's not that far. An all-day meeting, one of the topics is how do we plan to pay for those fire station improvements and the construction of these two new stations. So if you're interested, you could come down and spend the day with us. Maybe you can say exactly where that is. Yeah, it's fun.
The Mercer Slid Environmental Center.
Okay.
Dave, all right. Do you want to add a comment?
Dave.
Anywhere, over here.
Another long-term element in addition to our redeployment of resources that the council will be taking up in the not-too-distant future is requiring sprinklers in new construction. We do it in those certain areas where we will not be able to get to, but we're looking at trying to do that to all new construction. That's the International Building Code standard, and in fact the standards of how structures are built assumes that sprinklers will be required in all building structures. We took it up a number of years ago, and at that time we said, well, it probably adds too much to the cost of a house. We'll see what we have as the answer this time.
Why don't we just open it up for questions now, because we're at 25 after. We still had parks and planning and finance. Sure.
So I don't know if it's just that I'm on this Nextdoor app now or what, but I'm hearing about everybody who's got a break-in or a car problem or a burglary. And it's a little unsettling, and I don't know what to make of it or what the stats say or, you know, what we're doing about it.
I'll take that. That's a great question. So that's been a big topic of conversation in our public safety committee as well as our police department itself. I will say, in general, those social sites are making it seem like a lot more is happening than normal. The historic patterns aren't changing very much, but people are just more aware and they're talking about it. But even so, we take it very seriously. One of the things that the City Council has authorized us to do this year, and we just kicked it off, is a police strategic plan to say, do we need to invest differently or reallocate our existing resources to make sure that we can handle things like the property crimes, which do seem to be on the rise compared to some of the more serious crimes that are, you know, drug-related or some of the other issues. So the Public Safety Committee had their first discussion with the consultants about that. We're also going to be taking that up during our budget process, which starts this year for 17-18, and saying, do we need to allocate some resources, you know, in a different way to address those. But in general, we're not seeing a huge uptick. We're seeing a better sharing of information that things are happening. But at the same time, the City Council takes it very seriously as one of our, you know, foremost duties. So in both the police strategic plan process and the budget process, I think you're going to see a big focus on how do we address that. And in the meantime, I would say, because if the police were here, they would tell you this, call us. Call 911. Let people know. If you ever want the neighborhood safety resource officer to come out or anyone from one of the patrol districts to come out, they're more than happy to come to a community meeting, talk about it. They're more than happy to put on educational seminars about how to prevent yourself from getting prowled. You know, what sort of the state of the art
extra
is, and
patrols,
keeping your home safe, those kinds of things. So we have a very proactive education part of the police department as well, and all they need to do is be contacted, and they'd be happy to come out and talk to you. So that's something that you can also do through your neighborhood association or through CARI. So if you do want something like that, we can make that happen as well.
Other questions or comments about any topic?
I will say that's the number one thing you can do is not leave things in your car. That's what the police tell us time and time again, that people leave attractive computers and iPhones and things in their car, and people break in and get them.
Oh, sorry.
Hi. I'd like to say that I go to a lot of the city meetings. I go to City Hall a lot. I go to planning meetings. And I'd like to say that although we don't always agree, the council always listens, and I appreciate that as a citizen.
Thank you.
So I'm actually not going to ask about the topic you're expecting. there's a lot of clutter around town, from signs, the going out of town, the signs that people put inside the road around the middle of town, which the A-frame signs. I know it's on your agenda. Do you think we're going to get rid of those?
Dave, do you want to take that one?
I can talk about that.
You want to? Yeah, since I've been on the council with Dave, this is my sixth year. He's been talking about the sign code, and this is one of the topics that he's very passionate about. And we've had a lot, you know, we have to organize our planning commission's work program, and, you know, it just hasn't been the priority at the time. But I think Kurt has a plan for that.
Yeah, so it's a good plan. I'll cut back to you on that. The City Council actually has a joint meeting with the Planning Commission coming up, and on the Planning Commission work program is opening up the sign code to look at some of those issues. First and foremost, one of the things we have to address is we're actually out of compliance with state Supreme Court and U.S. Supreme Court decisions about signs. And most jurisdictions have been and need to fix it, and the main issue they've said is you cannot regulate signs based on content. So a simplistic example is most cities would let an A-frame sign be out for real estate. So, you know, go to, you know, you at Versi Village to buy something. But they might stop someone from putting a, you know, flea market down on the corner. And we'd regulate that and say, we don't want the flea market signs, but we'll let the real estate signs be out there. Through a series of national and local lawsuits, basically the courts have concluded that you can't pick the content. So if you're going to let A-frame signs be out, you have to let anything that, you know, complies with free speech be on the signs. So you are allowed to regulate the signs. You can say no A-frame signs. You just can't say you can have this message but not that message. So we have to address that because we haven't cleared that in our code. What we've actually done, unfortunately, while we've been out of compliance, is not enforce. So you are seeing a little bit of clutter because we don't quite have our code house in order. So the work program has dealing with the content neutral sign issue first and foremost, but as soon as you open up the sign code, then you have to have lots of conversations and have lots of policy decisions about what do you allow, why do you allow it, where do you allow it, when do you allow it. So it's not a simple undertaking, but it's an important one, and you're going to see the council and the Planning Commission braving forth into those waters this year.
It's going to be fun.
I will add one little comment. There's real estate signs that have been up since I've been on the council. I've been on the council 16 years.
We could do better than that. We will. Other questions or comments? Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for your attention and for being here, and really appreciate our commissioners and my colleagues on the council joining us for the presentation tonight. So I'll turn it back over to your chairs.
Thank you, Mayor Wallen. Thank you, City Manager Kurt Trippett, and thank you for Council Members Nixon and Asher for stepping in so ably. I failed at the beginning to introduce my co-chair, Lisa McConnell, who is here from the Kirkland Alliance of Neighborhoods. I don't even think I can introduce myself, but I'm Bea Naon. I'm co-chair of Kirkland Alliance of Neighborhoods. We have some other cantrips here. I see Jim McElwee's here. Who am I missing? Oh, John Pascal and Margaret Carnegie. And so thank you all for being here. I hope to see you at other neighborhood events. And with that, I think we're adjourned. Thank you.